This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
From pop culture to politics, this is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. A great day to consider a great act of courage and insight and constructive criticism about a mistake our society has been making for, more than 50 years right now. What is the mistake? The so-called sexual revolution. A book called The Case Against the Sexual Revolution. It is by a young woman who's 30 years old. So she is a daughter of the sexual revolution. Her name is Louise Perry. She is a rising journalist and campaigner, it says, in Great Britain. And she joins us on the line from London. Is that right, Louise? Hello, are you there? We have a terrible sound. Louise, are you there? Can you hear us? Good. There you are. Okay, you can hear us now.
I can hear you fine. Hi.
Thank you. And you are in London, right?
Yes, good evening from London.
Yes, well, good evening to you. And congratulations on the book. The book is called The Case Against the Sexual Revolution. The author is Louise Perry. And let me ask you first off, I was just looking at a review, and a very positive review, from a very left-wing publication, The Guardian, over in UK, and they describe your book as a potent, plain-speaking womanifesto. So congratulations on that. What has surprised you most so far about the reaction to your book?
How positive it has been. As you say, I got a very nice review in the Guardian Observer, and I've had very nice reviews from conservatives, from Christians, from atheists, really across the political spectrum. Criticism as well, as I was expecting. But, you know, when I was writing this book, I thought, this is going to be really controversial. You know, this is going to bring trouble down on my head. And you know what? I mean, maybe I'm speaking prematurely here, but so far, I'm getting away with it.
Has anyone challenged your basic premise? And as far as I can gather, the basic premise is, I'll read back to you from part of a piece that you posted summarizing the arguments in your book. The research is clear. Men are, on average, far more interested than women are in casual sex, buying sex, watching porn, and experimenting with unusual fetishes. It's not that women never enjoy such things, but on average they enjoy them much less than men do. Has anyone challenged you on that assumption?
So the criticism that I get sometimes of that that view, which is very much rooted in peer-reviewed data, you know, this book is crammed full of numbers and citations and whatever, because I thought that was important to make it clear that this is based on it's based on intuition, and I don't think anyone listening will be surprised to hear that data exists showing a difference in male and female sexuality, but it is also based on real research. The criticism that I get sometimes is that, yes, these differences exist, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they're caused by anything innately biological, you know, because I argue in the book that our evolutionary history can explain these differences very, very well. But some people say, no, this is just to do with the fact that we live in a culture that encourages men to behave in some ways and women to behave in other ways, which clearly is partly true. I think, though, that the problem with that argument is it doesn't account for the fact that these differences are cross-cultural. You know, you can look across any given country outside of the West or any historical period that we have good data on, and you'll find that same pattern in terms of the difference between male and female sexuality. And I think, is it really plausible that that is every single time being a consequence of culture and the way we raise children and so on? To me, it sounds like flipping a coin 1,000 times and it coming up heads every time, you know. I think it's just a lot more likely that what we're dealing with is a biological difference. And the argument that I want to make in the book is I don't think that feminists should be afraid of that biological difference. I don't think that we should kind of put all our energies into denying it. I think we should say, okay, the difference exists. What kind of sexual culture, what kind of legal system would be best suited to reducing the harm that comes from our, you know, our natures as men and women and as human beings?
Other than the message that tries to obliterate any differences or distinctions between males and females, particularly in the sexual arena, that basic lie, as you call it in your book, The Case Against the Sexual Revolution, what's been the most damaging factor of that revolution for women today?
So I think that the basic problem that we've got is we've got this difference between male and female sexuality, particularly on something like casual sex, right? So men are just, on average, crucially on average, there are outliers, a lot more interested in casual sex. They want to have more partners. They want to jump into bed more quickly with new people than women do. And this is combined with the fact that women also suffer all sorts of risks and burdens from sex that men don't face. You know, we're the ones who get pregnant, whether we want to or not. We are the ones who have to take hormonal birth control, which, of course, started this whole... I mean, my argument is really started the whole sexual revolution to begin with, the advent of hormonal birth control, which is designed, obviously, for women to take, which means that women also suffer all the side effects and so on. And also because women are smaller and weaker than men are physically, we're more at risk from violence. In any, you know, in any heterosexual encounter, the man and a woman alone together, the woman is always going to be physically at a disadvantage. And I think the problem with, you know, given that asymmetry, given the fact that the playing field is not an even one, I think that a culture of casual sex, which says that casual sex is not just an option for women, but is actually obligatory. I mean, that if you speak to young women, as I have in the writing of this book, who've grown up in this culture, I'm 30, so I'm kind of at the upper end of it, but students now at university and at school and so on, it doesn't feel to them as though this is just an option among many. You know, you could choose to wait till marriage, you could choose not to. The feeling is that the culture actually mandates it. It says that it's embarrassing to be a virgin, even as a teenager. You know, that if you're not hooking up at school or at college, it's because you're a prude. It very much feels as if this is the normal thing to do, and we know that teenagers in particular are obsessed with being normal, right? That's such an important priority for you at that age when you're really, really concerned with social status. And I think what's happened post-sexual revolution is that we've kind of flipped the culture. So it used to be in the 1950s and earlier that there was a sexual double standard, right? Women were expected to be chaste, were terribly judged if they were viewed as promiscuous in any way, in a way that men didn't. You know, there was a real unfairness there. There still is. But I think what's happened in a way is that whereas women used to be expected to be chaste, now they're expected to be up for it, you know, to be sexually adventurous, to be sexually available, to put out on a first date. And the thing that worries girls now is not so much being called a slut, but being called a prude.
Okay, we are going to get back to Louise Perry. Her book is called A Case Against the Sexual Revolution. And she has fascinating list of pieces of advice that she would offer her own daughter, including... only have sex with a man if you think he would make a good father. What a concept. We will get to that controversial concept, shouldn't be, with Louise Perry coming up on The Medved Show.
Washington Policy Center, WPC, is Washington State's champion for free market reforms and is nationally renowned for its effectiveness in an ideologically hostile state. It's led the effort against state and local income taxes. Its research and policy analysis are relied on by lawmakers, media, and citizen activists for accuracy, fresh perspective, and to expose the political manipulation of data. Our state needs WPC more than ever, and we need you to be part of it. Become a member today at washingtonpolicy.org. Is our country's distinctive power and prosperity the product of some happy accidents or criminal activity, or is it God's hand on America? That's the title, actually, of my most recent book. You can get a hardcover copy, personally signed by me, together with a full audiobook, and it comes to you together with an MP3 player so you can hear it anytime you want. It's all at a reduced price while supplies last. Go to michaelmedved.com, click on the banner for God's Hand on America, look for that audiobook and hardcover book bundle.
Now's the time to join the millions of Americans who have changed the quality of their sleep with MyPillow. MyPillow is now offering a BOGO extravaganza on multiple MyPillow products. Right now, get buy one, get one free pricing on MyPillow bed sheets, Giza Elegance MyPillows, six-piece towel sets, and roll and go anywhere MyPillows, and yes, so much more. Just go to the Radio Listeners Specials page at MyPillow.com and use the promo code MEDVED. That's MyPillow.com, promo code MEDVED, or call 1-800-320-6280. That's 800-320-6280. Don't miss this incredible BOGO extravaganza at MyPillow.com. Buy one, get one free on select products. Remember, that's promo code MEDVED or 1-800-320-6280.
Who listens to radio at night? EMTs, truck drivers, law enforcement, and many other hardworking people just like you, buying products and services from companies just like yours. Many companies owe their success to radio. It's the engaging medium. Call 877-996-4327 or email advertise@gcnlive.com. That's advertise@gcnlive.com.
Are you watching your retirement savings melt away right in front of your eyes as the economy crumbles? Well, if you have an IRA, 401k, or similar account, I need to tell you about a better way that was revealed by a Wall Street Journal best-selling book. Simply put, you can opt out of the insanity and convert your existing retirement account into the most stable physical asset in history, physical gold and silver. Plus, this conversion might qualify you for an IRS loophole that could save you even more. Today, Advantage Gold is giving away a completely free audiobook version of the national bestseller, Gold is a Better Way. Just text the word better to 48542 to get your copy. That's BETTER to 48542. By the time you drive home, this simple step may save the future value of your retirement. It's not too late if you're not prepared. You can take action now and claim a free copy. Text the word better to 48542. That's BETTER to 48542. Message and data rates may apply.
Advantage Gold is not an investment advisor or a tax advisor.
Complement your health with hemp-derived cannabinoid oil. We've always believed that the closer to Earth, the better it is for our bodies. Our hemp-derived cannabinoid oil is phytocannabinoid-rich, full-spectrum, and organically grown. Finally, hemp made easy, clean, and effective. GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203. That's right, we cut through the red tape. It's now available at GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203.
Michael Medved Show, the book by Louise Perry, it is just out. It is already a bestseller. It is going to be a book that generates a great deal of discussion and impact. The title is The Case Against the Sexual Revolution. And Louise begins with a premise, which I think is accurate, which is that everybody has been heralding the sexual revolution as a great moment of liberation, a new possibility. And what she writes is that it has actually shackled an entire generation. And some of what she offers in the book is advice that she would offer her own daughter. First of all, do you mind my asking, Louise, do you have a daughter?
No, I only have a son so far. I hope to have a daughter one day.
Okay, well, we'll have to talk about advice you would offer him, because part of reading your book, The Case Against Sexual Revolution, indicates that men have to get hold of themselves and stop glorying in some of the behavior that you would consider reprehensible. But you have a point here when you talk about advice for a daughter. Only have sex with a man if you think he would make a good father to your children. And you say not because you necessarily intend to have children with that man, but because this is a good rule of thumb in deciding whether he's worthy of your trust.
Yeah.
Explain, because this is profoundly important.
Part of the reason I came up with that rule is I think that so we spoke just earlier about some of the ways in which men and women are different on average, right? And differences in sexuality are the most glaring to my mind and the center of my whole book's premise. But there are other differences too in terms of personality and behavior and so on. And one of them, which is very well documented, is that women tend to be more what psychologists call agreeable than men on average. In layman's terms, we'd normally say that women tend to be more sort of nice and self-sacrificing and tend to put people... Basically, you know, it's our kind of maternal instincts coming out that women do tend to be more caring than men are on average. Not always, obviously, but on average. And I think that one of the ways that that plays out often in relationships between the sexes is that women... It's amazingly easy, particularly for young women, to persuade them to not put their interests first and to not be assertive and to put up with... all kinds of nonsense from men. I mean, the problem, I think, is that our current culture really does encourage sometimes the sort of men's worst sides to be expressed, you know, the casual, the anonymous, the disposable, this really quite, like, brutal attitude towards sexual relationships. And women, young women in particular, are putting up with this. It kind of amazes me, and part of what I'm trying to do with this book is for young female readers, even though my readers so far have come from every possible demographic you can imagine, but for young women in particular, is to inspire some confidence and some that feeling of actually, no, I don't actually have to put up with, you know, feeling disposable, disrespected, and so on. And I thought that trying to assess a potential boyfriend based on, you know, is he going to treat me right, is he going to respect me, whatever, this clearly isn't working out for a lot of women. They're not actually sort of putting their own interests front and centre at the moment when they should be. But I think that we do tend to, as women, as mothers, we do tend to be good at looking out for our children and sometimes, you know, fiercely protecting the interests of our children. And so what I was trying to encourage with that particular piece of advice was to try and kind of get into that mentality of thinking, okay, maybe I can't quite sort of stand up for myself, but can I stand up for people I love? Yes, I think so, you know. So that was kind of what I was, the psychological state I was trying to get readers into with that particular piece of advice.
One of your other pieces of advice that you would offer to a future daughter, if you're blessed with that, is don't use dating apps. Now, this is a multi-billion-dollar industry, right? So what's the problem with dating apps? I'm also thinking, particularly, there are some dating apps that are religious in nature, that are based on people with shared religious values. Would you make an exception there, or you think dating apps in general are a problem?
Yeah, so I might make an exception for religious dates. I mean, the advantage that dating apps give, and this obviously would apply to religious ones as well, is they do give you access to a a large pool of options, right? I mean, if you're in a city like London, you've got thousands, tens of thousands of singles within a small radius of you, and having that, you know, access to that many potential partners is clearly amazing, and all with so much convenience and so on. The problem is, I mean, there are several problems, but the one that I think is most pressing is that I think dating apps encourage a kind of quite savage, quite anonymous way of people relating to one another, which is very, very based on superficial photos, the briefest of descriptions. What often seems to happen on these apps as well is that they, even if they're not originally designed as hookup apps, they kind of degenerate over time to become hookup apps. We've just celebrated, if that's the right word, 10 years of Tinder, which has now become very much associated with the casual sex culture, and new apps keep coming along which market themselves as being, no, this one really is about serious relationships, this one really is about, you know, seeking Mr. Right, and they all end up being like Tinder in the end. And I think this is partly to do with the fact that the men who do really, really well on dating apps and get lots and lots of matches are a really small minority of men. It's really the only... The top, I think the figure on Tinder is that the top 10% of men in terms of attractiveness get 60% of the attention from women. This is to do with the fact that women do tend to unconsciously kind of aspire to match up with men who are high status in all sorts of ways. And what ends up happening, therefore, is that if you're lucky enough to be one of these men who gets loads and loads of matches, you've got the pick of the bunch. Most men aren't getting any matches at all. They're just kind of left miserably lonesome on dating apps.
Yeah, they become incel and serial killers, unfortunately. speaking of serial killers, one other point before we run out of time that I wanted to get to is you say chivalry is actually a good thing. Define chivalry.
I think that chivalry is basically, stripped down all the other the kind of cultural accessories, is basically the recognition that men are at a physical disadvantage over women, in all sorts of ways, but particularly in terms of size and strength. And I think the principle is basically that with that kind of power comes responsibility. You can't expect us all to behave in exactly the same way, given the fact that we are different in some really profound dimensions. And I think that a culture of chivalry basically tells men that actually they have a responsibility to use their power well and with kindness and to treat women with dignity and respect. And so
amen to that. A little bit of a word for self-control. And self-control is certainly a value advanced by Louise Perry. She is a writer based in London, UK. She's the author of the very provocative and very successful new book, The Case Against the Sexual Revolution.
G'day, I'm Jamel that works with Dr. Joel Wallach and the GCN team with Youngevity at teamg'day.com. By becoming an associate, you provide income for you and your family on your own hours while working from home. So contact me, Jamel, by filling in the contact box at teamg'day.com and I will get back to you personally and provide all the support you need to get started and build your Youngevity business. Teamg'day.com. Teamg'day.com.
Frustrated trying to get business capital? Want to take the slow process and rejection out of the equation? GCNLoans.com removes the slow, irritating approval process. Instead, get quick, simple funding. Powered by David Allen Capital, 80% of our pre-qualified clients are approved in days. Pre-qualify at GCNLoans.com and get your money this week. It's that easy. GCNLoans.com. That's GCNLoans.com.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
It looks like fewer workers were hired this month compared to last month. Payroll processing firm ADP says 132,000 jobs were added to private payrolls in August, which is less than half of the gains seen in July. ADP's chief economist noting job growth could be normalizing as we could be at an inflation point. Americans' confidence on the U.S. economy is on the upswing. Gallup's Economic Confidence Index shows folks are significantly less negative in how they see the economy now than they were in July. Economic Perspective became more optimistic as gas prices began slowing this month and are now $1 lower than in June. Remembrance is taking place in Paris on Wednesday as today marks 25 years since the death of Princess Diana. You're listening to USA Radio News.
Every day we take steps to keep the people we love safe, but some health risks are easy to miss. Ticks hiding in the yard can spread germs that can cause Lyme disease and Rocky Mountain spotted fever. Mice searching for sources of food can spread bacteria and disease. Mosquitoes breed in standing water and can transmit illnesses like West Nile virus and Zika virus. Cockroaches are drawn to water in the home and can leave behind allergens that trigger asthma attacks. Stinging insects attack in defense of their nests and send more than 500,000 people to the emergency room every year. Household pests are a threat to our health. Learn what you can do to protect your family at pestworld.org.
Stop aging now. Restore those joints. Boost your strength. Because it's official. NutraMedical has released the most exciting, powerful anti-aging supplement on the market. Dr. Bill Deagle's Red Deer Velvet DR has been approved by the U.S. Patent Office. Imagine stem cell rejuvenation all in one capsule without huge expense. Dr. Bill MD discovered that as an unborn baby grows in the mother's womb, he or she does not deteriorate or physically age. Red Deer Velvet DR, like the uterus, provides 300 biomolecules and 6 hormones protected in one special DR capsule that delivers lipid packages directly into your circulation. This patented technology bypasses the stomach and is released into the small bowel unaltered by digestive enzymes and stomach acid. Remember, Red Deer Velvet DR. Improve endurance, stimulate your immune system, increase learning ability, and even improve sexual libido with Red Deer Velvet DR. Click NutriMedical.com. That's NutriMedical.com. Or call toll-free 888-212-8871 and get on the road to a newer, rejuvenated, happier you.
On the Michael Medved show, there is a piece which I initially thought was a piece with tongue in cheek, because it's so much going against the current political discussion, particularly in one of the finest journals, it seems to me, of opinion there is, which is National Review. And the piece is by Charles C.W. Cook, and the title, the headline is Save Our Political System, Impeach and Convict Joe Biden. Now, this is not to associate Charles C.W. Cook in any way with Marjorie Taylor Greene, who has already committed herself to introduce articles of impeachment against Joe Biden. And it seems to me that if I can make out what Mr. Cook is doing here, is he's actually making a very important point and trying to get our attention by talk of impeachment. The chances, even if the Republicans take over the House of Representatives, the chances of getting through articles of impeachment on Joe Biden because he has authorized the forgiveness of student loans, which is what Cook is talking about, the chances are nil. It won't happen. And one of the arguments I made against the impeachment of Donald Trump was it was very obvious what would happen is that there would be an impeachment was voted by the House of Representatives, where you only need a majority, but then it would go to the Senate, where you need two-thirds of the votes. You need 67 senators to vote for removal from office, and that's virtually impossible. I mean, given the fact that there will be at least one-third of the senators in the Senate who are from the president's own party, who will vote against impeachment until Mitt Romney and President Trump's first impeachment. He became the first candidate with a president's own party voting to remove the president from office. And then there were seven other U.S. senators who voted. But that's seven. And especially with the Senate split the way it is, they would have needed 17 or more, because given the fact that the Senate, before the new senators were elected, before the impeachment process was over, in fact, the Senate was 52-48. And then it was split in its 50-50 shape. But look, this is not to share with you any suspicion that Joe Biden will be impeached or removed from office. He won't. But I do think that Cook is right about the unconstitutional nature of what Biden has done here. He writes, evidently Biden feels as if there are no consequences to violating his oath of office. Last August, Biden double, triple, quadruple checked whether he was allowed to order another moratorium on evictions without Congress, and he concluded that he was not. Then he did it anyway, on the outrageous grounds that the time it would take to litigate might allow him to keep this going for a month at least, I hope longer. Last Wednesday, Biden pulled the same trick with student loans, that the president does not have the statutory power to cancel college loans has long been so obvious that even Nancy Pelosi has managed to acknowledge it. The president can't do it, writes Cook. That's not even a discussion. And that's actually a quote from Nancy Pelosi. That's what she said last year. People think the president of the United States has the power for debt forgiveness. But he does not, Nancy confirmed. A week ago, Biden did it anyway, with the help of what might be the single most cynical and embarrassing legal memorandum in modern American history. And why wouldn't he, given that presidents have started to get away with such behavior as a matter of routine? In 2012, President Obama told audience after audience that he couldn't suspend deportations through executive order because there are laws on the books that Congress has passed. Those laws on the books by Congress, Obama said more than 20 times, are very clear in terms of how we have to enforce our immigration system. I'm not a king, Obama said. I'm not the emperor of the United States, he noted. There is a path to get this done, and that is through Congress, he insisted. Then he did it anyway, on his own. And nothing happened. In 2019, writes C.W. Cook, Donald Trump followed suit, exasperated by his repeated inability to convince the Democratic Congress to appropriate funds for his border wall. Trump announced that he had discovered some emergency laws on the books that, conveniently enough, allowed him to go it alone. Trump then took $6.5 billion from the Treasury. And President Biden, of course, with the forgiveness of the loans, has taken much more. It's over $300 billion. There's not a single person in America, writes C.W. Cook, who believes that what President Biden has done is legal. And that includes the people who penned the contrived legal justifications for him. His order is a ruse, a scheme, a hijacking, the product not of genuine ambiguity in the law, but of a preference for brute force. I know it. You know it. We all know it. President Biden knows it. That is why, in almost taunting tones, the president's apologists have begun to remind the dissenters that under the current standing rules, there may be no person in America who can sue. Well, they ask gleefully, what you gonna do about it? I'll tell you what I would do about it, writes C.W. Cook. I'd impeach and convict the president. And end this trend for good. In this country, Congress makes the laws. In this country, Congress appropriates the funds. In this country, Congress sets immigration policy. In this country, as Barack Obama liked to remind us, the president is not a dictator or an emperor or a king. In this country, there is a path to getting things done, and that path is only through Congress. And if the president doesn't like it, then the president can go home. Among the many scars that Woodrow Wilson left on the American system of government, we can count the notion that the three branches of government are co-equal. They are not. This is very important and good for him. Congress is prime. Congress can pass laws without the president. The president cannot pass laws without Congress. And then you say, what about a veto? You can override a veto. If you get two-thirds or more of the votes on both houses of Congress, boom, forget the veto. Congress can pass a law without the president. President cannot pass laws without Congress. Congress can remove the president. Yes, it's called impeachment and conviction and removal from office. Never happened, but they got Nixon to resign. Congress can remove the president. The president cannot remove Congress. Along with the states, Congress can amend the Constitution. The president cannot. Look at any part of the American order, and you'll find that Congress has the power either to veto the other branches or to change the status quo via other means. Last January, Congress should have used this power to impeach and convict President Trump. And a decade ago, Congress should have used this power to impeach Barack Obama. And today, Congress should use this power to remove Joe Biden from office for repeatedly breaking his oath in the most transparent way imaginable. Now, if the Democrats or if the Republicans try to go with this argument as a part of a platform for their congressional races coming up this November, it's not going to work because, again, I believe that the two Trump impeachments have left Americans, and justifiably so, very, very wary of the impeachment process. It generally does not work. But in terms of making a case that people ought to take seriously and ought to use to challenge Joe Biden politically, if not legally, well, good for him. Because I think he's right, unless you think you can figure out a power that the president should have to forgive other people's loans. We will be right back on the MedVed Show. Summertime, and a lot of Americans get more active. And when you get more active, sometimes that causes some aches and pain. Neck, shoulder, hip, knee. I mean, I had a sore arm for a while, but fortunately I also have Relief Factor. And more to the point, my wife, who is always more active than I am, she uses Relief Factor as well. It is a great, wholly natural, very healthy, scientifically proven pain reliever. It is, you have nothing to lose but your pain and the whole world to gain. And right now, Relief Factor is still discounted at only $19.95 for what's called a quick start. So about a dollar a day to see if you can get out of pain in just a couple of weeks. And for the cost of a cup of coffee a day, you can get out and stay out of pain. Check it out at michaelmedved.com. Look for the banner for Relief Factor. History repeats itself, and we're seeing that play out with inflation. When Jimmy Carter took office in the late 70s, gold sold for $140 an ounce. Can you imagine? By 1980, the price of gold topped out at $870 an ounce. Now, if today's market performs like it did when Carter was in office, the price of gold could skyrocket from $1,800 an ounce to $9,300 an ounce. This is Michael Medved for AmFed Coin and Bullion. Don't miss out on a great opportunity to purchase precious metals while the prices are still stable. If history repeats itself, we'll see a run on gold, silver, and platinum that will certainly drive up prices. Be smart. Buy now. At AmFed, you're dealing with specialists who provide you with personalized attention, honest information, and sound advice. You'll never be pressured into buying outrageously priced so-called collectible coins or anything that you don't need. 800-221-7694, 800-221-7694, AmericanFederal.com.
Extendivite testimonials on Amazon are very informative. Here's just a few. Amazon customer, 5 stars. Honestly, this stuff works. Nick, easy to take capsules. For those who can't handle the liquid drops, easy to take Extendivite capsules do the same job. Karoka Fan. Works great. Like Extendivite very much. Seems to work as advertised. Thanks. Arlene, 5 stars. Love this product, Extendivite. Terry W., 5 stars. Can't say enough. Great product. Freya, 5 stars. I just ordered another. To get your Extendivite today, go to Extendivite.com. That's Extendivite.com. Or call us at 1-877-928-8822.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
My name is Stephen Hewer. In 1976, when I was 15 years of age, I was poisoned from 2 mercury dental fillings. The mercury came off these fillings in such high amounts that I went from having excellent health to having chronic constipation and candida overgrowth. I could barely eat any food for 4 years, which resulted in adrenal exhaustion by the age of 20. Despite years of diet experimentation, juice fasting, and intestinal cleansing, it was not until I took certain prescription sulfur amino acids that I healed my eliminatory function and eliminated my candida overgrowth. Later, it was not until I began to consume Green Meadow Whey that I eliminated my mercury burden 100%. Had Green Meadow Whey existed in 1976, I could have healed my gut and body decades earlier. Green Meadow Whey supplies a very high concentration of the sulfur amino acids needed to fuel glutathione production. Glutathione removes mercury and virtually all other toxins from the body. Set your body free from the burden of heavy metals and environmental toxins with Green Meadow Whey. To order, go to bestwayprotein.net. That's bestwayprotein.net or call 888-988-3325.
Michael Medved show, obviously the problem of homelessness is a problem that you're not going to hear a lot about on the campaign trail. You should, actually, but particularly in cities where it is especially acute and where there's been a very, very difficult job in trying to improve things in any way. There is a piece in the Daily Mail, and the Daily Mail, by the way, the Louise Parker, who we just had on the air, talking about her book on the sexual revolution, one of the publications in Britain she writes for is the Daily Mail. But they just did a huge pictorial about the homeless problem in San Francisco. And San Francisco, as a city, it has a population of 870,000. And there are at least 8,000 people who are homeless and living on the streets. They just did a huge pictorial with images showing the city streets crowded with tents, as figures show 8,000 are homeless. Which is truly stunning when you think about it, because that's not a ridiculously small percentage of the city's population. 8,000 out of 800,000, that's it's close to, because it's 870,000 is the population of the city of San Francisco, is close to 1 out of 100. And if you're dealing with 1 out of 100 people, they say in the Daily Mail, the shocking images bring into stark focus the homelessness problems facing the progressive city. Rows of tents pictured lined up outside businesses with people's belongings strewn across the sidewalk. Homelessness in San Francisco is higher now than at any other time, bar 2019, according to the official count in February. It comes as the Castro Street Merchants Association threatened to stop paying city taxes due to the loss of trade. In other words, they're supposed to be paying taxes to the city of San Francisco, and what they're saying is that if you can't do something to get the homeless multitudes from off our street and from out in front of our stores, we're not going to pay taxes. There's also new data that claims that in San Francisco, The Castro Merchants Association, which represents 125 businesses, sent a letter to city officials outlining three demands: 35 shelter beds for mentally ill and substance abusing individuals who have taken up residence in the Castro, monthly metrics on services offered to the homeless in the Castro, and a devised plan following a homeless person's refusal of services, which, of course, is one of those problems that you have all across the country, where you have homeless problems, and we do very much in the city of Seattle. There is new data that says that at some point there will be 20,000 people who will be homeless in San Francisco this year, but that includes the people who are living in shelters or living in some kind of housing. I believe the number 8,000 is more accurate for the people actually living on the street. But the entire thing is crazy and horrible. And the fact that government can't seem to do anything about it, the Castro Merchants Association, as a Daily Mail report says, the group said it is sick of homeless living outside their entrances, threatening customers and vandalizing stores. And the governor of California, Gavin Newsom, who of course has presidential possibilities, recently vetoed a bill that would have allowed cities to open supervised drug injection sites, which help addicts to access regulated substances and attend rehabilitation. Now, is there any evidence at all that setting up drug injection sites actually helps homeless people? Or does it just encourage people with their addiction problems to continue living on the streets when they can wander into go ahead and shoot up under medical supervision? I mean, the entire inability to come to grips with this situation is stunning. There's also a problem here in Seattle. I mean, obviously, there's many problems. But the mayor of Seattle, who I believe has tried much more than his predecessors, his certainly immediate two predecessors, Mayor three predecessors, Mayor McGinn, Mayor Murray, and Mayor Durkin. Bruce Harrell, the current mayor, has tried at least, and he has supervised and authorized some clearance of homeless encampments. But he said behind closed doors that he felt that the regional homelessness authority was working against him. And then at a press event, he confirmed this morning something that I think is appropriate, that he's going to seek to reduce funding to the entity because the Regional Homelessness Authority has done almost nothing to actually reduce the impact or the prevalence of homelessness. This is the mayor. Listen.
You mentioned that the King County Homelessness Authority is working against your interests. Are you going to be proposing in a couple weeks a budget reduction for them?
Yes. And again, I'm sure everyone knows, but it bears repeating that people ask me about my remarks and my attitude toward the Regional Homelessness Authority. So you will see, we'll present our budget in a few weeks, but you will see our clear recognition of a lot of the great work they are doing. And that is why I was very intentional in my remarks to talk about Woodland Park Zoo, the work they were doing. But let me say this. That is one tool of many. LEAD is one tool of many. Our social workers and mental health counselors and our police officers are one tool of many. Community passageways is one tool of many. And you put all those tools together, and I'm still not happy with what I'm seeing. And you do not want a mayor that's complacent. You do not want a mayor that's satisfied with too little in this city. That crow even agrees with me.
Yeah, I mean, the crows, they live in the parks too, and they don't leave quite as much garbage around, and certainly they don't leave the needles around for people to step on. There's another problem in America, and this is actually from Fox News, and the headline, "More Americans Smoke Marijuana Than Cigarettes," poll finds. Now, look, smoking tobacco is so awful, and it really is destructive for society and destructive for people's health. You could say, well, that's good news, except for the fact that there are so many problems associated with smoking marijuana. A majority of people say they smoke marijuana more than cigarettes based on data from a new Gallup poll. Here is a theory, and again, it is not a proven theory, but I think it is one that has a real basis. This data that they are gathering is not based on any scientific sampling or any medical testing. It's based on self-reporting. And in 2019, Gallup conducted a poll that found 83% of people believe that smoking cigarettes is a very harmful. And another 14% responded that it's somewhat harmful. In other words, 97% of people know that smoking cigarettes is terrible for you. So I believe that when someone is asked, do you smoke cigarettes, they are very likely to say no, even if the answer is yes. According to these numbers, there are a record low of 11% of adults who report smoking cigarettes, with approximately 3 in 10 non-smokers stating they used to smoke, a steep drop in cigarette use compared to 45% in the 1950s. There has clearly been a drop in cigarette use. But I know from the number of cigarette butts I pick up on litter patrol, it's probably higher than these figures indicate. And they indicate that there are some 16% of people, rather than the 10% who, or 11%, pardon me, who say they smoke marijuana. Less social stigma against smoking marijuana than against smoking cigarettes? Maybe. Is that appropriate? Maybe not. In this greatest nation on God's green earth.
Fred Dreyer here for a product I use and love, Balance7.com. Are you suffering with heartburn? Get relief from Balance 7. Most people are able to go back to eating the foods they enjoy with Balance 7. Please don't be stubborn. This really works. You're just a sip away from enjoying the foods you like. Try Balance 7 with a money-back guarantee. Do you suffer with joint discomfort? Getting out of bed in the morning feeling how stiff your body is and wondering how bad is it going to get as the years go by? Try Balance 7. It reduces the acid buildup in the body. In 3 days' time, you will feel a great improvement. Getting older doesn't have to mean it has to get worse. Use Balance 7. Go to Balance7.com or call 800-793-9039. That's 800-793-9039. Mention the code word FRED and get $10 off your order. Call 800-793-9039 and mention the code word FRED. Get heartburn relief and more with my favorite, Balance7.com.
Hey trader, listen up. The markets have changed. Have you changed your trading strategies? Vantage Point can help you conquer volatility. Learn to trade with artificial intelligence. Text the word money to 813-813 and discover how to predict stock market trends 1 to 3 days in advance with up to 87.4% proven accuracy. No matter which way the market moves, Vantage Point's patented AI can give you a massive edge. Text money to 813-813 to get what you need to stay ahead of markets and find your best entries and exits. Text the word money to 813-813.
Trading involves financial risk and is not suitable for all investors. Past results do not guarantee future performance. By texting, you agree to the terms available at vantagepointsoftware.com/terms and consent to receive calls and texts using automated technology about offers or info by or on behalf of Vantage Point. Your consent is not a condition to purchase and can be revoked at any time. Message and data rates may apply.
Text money to 813-813.